The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. This is Don Soa, delighted to share your drive time home with you tonight. Moving towards the end of the month of April, and even though we are getting to the end of the month, we are clearly in the midst of earnings season. There are a lot of, matter of fact, today was a huge day, both before and after the close of the markets for major companies to actually announce their earnings. Some of them clearly knocking the ball out of the park, but it wasn't a big day overall in the market. We've had a fabulous week, but stocks did edge higher. There were a number of major tech companies' earnings, technology side company earnings this week. The Dow and the S&P index were fractionally higher. While the tech-heavy NASDAQ gained about 0.4% to close at a record high of 6,048.94, again, above that 6,000 number. Comcast, PayPal, Amazon.com, they were among the biggest contributors to the gains in the NASDAQ today. Now, ahead of the open, NBC Universal's parent company, Comcast, reported better-than-expected quarterly profits of about 53 cents per share. Revenue also was above the forecast number. Shares climbed nearly 4% as a result of these numbers, tracking for the best day that they've had since February the 3rd of 2016, last year. Now, information technology was among the top S&P 500 performance categories in morning trading. Energy was the worst, dropping about 1%. Oil prices fell 2% on oversupply concerns. You got to understand something. A lot of analysts got to this point. They were expecting the price of oil globally to be right around $60 a barrel. But U.S. crude futures for the month of June delivery hit their lowest level since March 29th. And we're last actually trading somewhere in and around that $48 a barrel range. So that's quite a bit lower than they had anticipated. Now, while summer driving season has historically helped drive oil prices higher, domestic inventory levels remain elevated by historic standards, which means we don't need a lot of oil from the pumps around the world when, in fact, it's sitting there in storage at this particular case, as they call it, domestic inventory. We remain pretty hard-pressed to get excited for the prospects of higher oil prices in a sub-2% GDP growth environment. So if the overall economy is growing at 2% or less, the likelihood that demand for oil should be higher than what a $48 a barrel number reflects, it's not likely. You're not likely to see that happening. Some incremental demand from emerging markets would probably be necessary to more substantially drive these prices higher and drive up the inventory, drive down the inventory levels. Now, companies like Alphabet, which is formerly Google, Amazon.com, as I mentioned before, Intel, Microsoft, and Starbucks are among companies which will all be announcing their earnings after the bell today. Now, it's policy grabbing the headlines, but the earnings still drive the market. And the matter of the fact is the earnings have been pretty darn good. So when everybody lately has been asking me about whether or not it is the Trump effect or, what's happening out of Washington, the overall drive of expectations for Trump policy initiatives, I said, well, they're still out there. There's still a little bit of that, but maybe the moves we've seen since the election in November do in fact reflect some of that expectation. It's already built into the price. But the kind of movements we're seeing over the past week or so are really genuinely reflective of earnings growth within these corporations, earnings growth that had not been fully anticipated. And that's a good thing. It says that, okay, well, maybe the market's not cheap right now, and the metrics we use for valuation, such as price to earnings and those sorts of things, are above average. They're not high. They're not super high, but they're above average. So we don't have what you'd call a cheap market, and the low-hanging fruit has probably been picked. But if we can assume possibly, based upon continued possibilities of economic growth and opportunity, And the fact that corporate America is surprising the analysts each quarter as the numbers come out, maybe we can assume that, hey, you know, the health of these companies and the health of their earnings and the prospects for future earnings may justify higher prices than we're looking at. And that will keep this rally, this really this bull market that started back in 2008, will just continue. And that's okay. It doesn't have to be ideally robust, but you could see an average annual return over the next few years anyway. That could be somewhere in that 7, 7.5, even 8 range, depending upon, you know, a few factors. And yes, policy coming out of Washington, fiscal policy, which would be basically out of the White House, the House of Representatives in the Senate, not so much monetary policy out of the Fed, but fiscal policy. Those initiatives could push economic growth. And if we're growing at under 2%, but if we could get up to, forget the 3% or 4% targets, but just get up to, say, 2.5%, if we could do that, then this market would, we could justify seeing higher prices in all of these indexes across the board. The major U.S. stock indexes did close marginally lower yesterday, holding within about 1% of their intraday highs, though, after the announcement of President Trump's tax plan. Top officials call the proposal the biggest tax cut in U.S. history, but remained kind of vague on highly anticipated details, such as the tax rate on repatriation of overseas profits. So you're getting this big, big, broad, generic picture of some sort of a tax bill, which really only kind of told us that, yeah, maybe sitting around over a cup of coffee or a Diet Coke, you know, they're talking a little bit about a tax policy, but we're not actually seeing what would have to be rather impressive details to give anybody the sense of whether these things, whether the numbers actually work. There are still a number of economists and analysts out there that look at what the president and his people are proposing and say that there's some pie in the sky going on here. We'll have to wait and see. I just think we're a little extended after the two-day move that we saw earlier in the week, according to Peter Coleman. He's the head trader over at Convergex. But everybody's anticipating the tax plan. And so if the tax plan is highly favorable, would bring down a lot of expense, and would move more cash into the overall market, which would be a very positive thing. Consumer and investor and corporate confidence would rise. Well, that could all translate into higher profitability and, of course, higher stock prices. Although they gave some detail, it wasn't really very specific, as I mentioned. Now, durable goods orders rose a less than expected 0.7% in March. Weekly jobless claims increased more than expected to about 257,000. Pending home sales fell 0.8% in the month of March. And Treasury yields traded mostly lower, and the euro held right around 1,090. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program, and I'm Don Sowa. Thanks for tuning into AM 790, your home of talking business. We'll be right back, so please stick around.
Dunkin' Donuts Regional Traffic, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin' Donuts Iced Coffee is America's iced coffee. Now available in butter pecan and new coconut cream pie flavors. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Busy but moving on 95 North and South, getting through Providence right now. The crash on 295 southbound has cleared out by Johnson, so things are still slow around 6 all the way down to the Plainfield Pike. If you're coming in on 195 westbound, busy there from Taunton Ave in, but it had been backed up almost to Seekonk. Things looking better for you there. I'm Rich Teeter with your Right Now Traffic.
Sponsored by the Knee and Back Pain Helpline. Learn how an insurance-covered comfortable knee or back brace can reduce your pain. Call 800-888-KNEE, 800-888-KNEE.
It's time for the Brown Bears Minute, sponsored by Navigant Credit Union. Brown men's and women's lacrosse pulled off a clean sweep this past weekend. All-American Dylan Malloy scored 4 goals and handed out 3 assists. And freshman goalie Phil Goss made 10 of his 14 saves in the second half, fueling Brown to a 13-10 Ivy League win over Cornell. In women's lacrosse, freshman Emma DiGennaro scored the game winner in overtime, leading the Bears past Columbia 14-13. Brown softball and baseball will both play host to Ivy League foe Yale on Sunday, April 30th. Softball with a doubleheader at 12:30 and 2:30 at Brown Softball Stadium, and baseball at 1:30 at Murray Stadium. Visit brownbears.com or call 401-863-2773. Can't make it to the game? Catch all the live Brown Bears action online or on the go on the Ivy League Network. Visit ILDN.tv for more info. Go Bruno! The Brown Bears Minute is brought to you by Navigate Credit Union. Enjoy life's journey.
This is your Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Denise Pellegrini. We talk a lot about how builders aren't building enough new homes to meet supply, especially when it comes to more affordable homes. But there's another reason inventory is so tight.
We see more homeowners who have decided, hey, I'm just going to stay in this home. I've got a low interest rate. There's not a lot of inventory for me to buy if I sold this home.
Darren Bloomquist, vice president at Adam Data Solutions, says homeowners are even making a profit off those low mortgage rates, making them even less likely to sell their homes.
Even if homeowners are moving, rather than sell the home that they're moving out of, they're keeping that home as a rental. Or, on the other hand, they're leveraging the home equity in their current home and buying rental properties as investments in other parts of the country.
There are some early signs the inventory logjam may be easing, with the average length of homeownership falling in metros like Boston and Portland. And that's your Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Denise Pellegrini.
Guys don't really talk about antiperspirant. Despite that, 91% of Dove Men Plus Care users recommend it. Here's what they said.
It blocks the, perspiration, I think is the fancy word.
It's comfortable.
It smells nice. My girl likes the smell.
Well, it's hard.
I think it's quite masculine.
My underarms aren't the worst thing at the gym.
It's kind of like the Hoover Dam for my armpits, I guess.
Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant. Tough on sweat, not on skin.
ADT presents What to Consider When Considering Home Security. An ADT sign is more than a sign. It's a line in the sand. On one side, your family. On the other, an uncertain world.
For over 140 years, more people have chosen ADT to help prevent crime than anyone else. Get ADT starting at just $28.99 a month.
Tested, trusted, proven ADT.
With 36-month contract for licensing and terms and conditions, visit ADT.com.
New York Yankees baseball on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Swung on and in the air to deep left center. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Happy holidays. Happy holiday. Matt has back. He hits a three-run home run to left center.
New York Yankees baseball on AM 790 Talk and Business. This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program, everybody. This is Don Sowa. For those of you just tuning into the program, we are welcoming you here to AM 790, your home of talk and business. One of the things that we have mentioned many times here on our nightly Money Talk program is the fact that we're in an environment where interest rates are finally, slowly starting to rise. They rise for a lot of different reasons. One of them, of course, is if the Federal Reserve decides as part of its strategy that it's going to raise the cost or the rate that they charge their member banks. They call that the Fed fund rate. And they have, in fact, done that a couple of times, although not as much as a great many people predicted. Right now, we're looking at a rate that probably by year end, with maybe two more increases, may be in and around the 1 to 1.25% range. That's, of course, so as they charge more for it, then the member banks will charge more for the money as well. That pushes rates higher. We're also in an environment where the markets themselves can push rates higher. If the value of bonds in the open market, if bonds are being sold, then if there's a lot of demand to sell bonds, then there's going to be a glut of bonds out there, and the value of those bonds, the prices on them, will go down because of a supply and demand fundamental. If not everybody wants them, if everybody's trying to sell them, the price will drop. Now, as that happens, there's a reciprocal relationship in the bond yield. The bond yields will rise as the value of the underlying bonds goes down. That's one of the magic elements of fixed income investing. So as it happens in the open market, you can see some of that occurring. As the rate yields became kind of unattractive on a number of bonds, especially those in the lower maturities, you know, the 2-year, 3-year, 5-year, 7-year bonds, if they get low enough, then people start moving money out of them and realizing, geez, you know, there's stocks out there in the S&P 500 alone that pay 2% dividend and some of them higher. There's other areas you can go, other places you can put your money that will give you a higher yield than you can get on a lot of bonds. Now, bonds, by their design, by their makeup, will be less volatile in as part of a portfolio than will all elements or even some lesser correlated areas of the stock market. So people will own bonds in their portfolio, understanding that they may get a slightly lower return on that part of the portfolio, but it's an asset they put in place to reduce volatility. You're going to be an investor. You understand if you want to take, say, a third of the money in your portfolio and put them in an asset that, by its design, between capital appreciation and a dividend, probably won't do more than 3 or 4% return. Well, that's okay. 3 or 4 is still better than you could get in CDs or anything else in the bank, typically. But, you know, the other two-thirds of the portfolio will have to be invested, taking on a bit more risk in order to increase the overall total return of your gross portfolio, your household account. That's all the money. So maybe a third of it is in a lesser performing yet less risky area of the market, and the other two-thirds are in a potentially higher performing yet more risky area of the market. Now, depending upon how much risk you're willing to take, how much volatility you think you could tolerate, and of course a lot of that will have to do with your time frame. When are you going to need this money? Obviously, you're saving and investing this money for a reason. Well, if you're going to be retiring and you need this money to supplement your Social Security, for example, to help to live on when you're no longer getting a paycheck, then, you know, if you're within that, say, 10-year period of that, yes, you're more than likely to say, well, I just don't have the time, given my 10-year time frame here, I just don't have the time to tolerate a major correction that might occur in the market. And so they say, look, I would rather accept a slightly lower overall gross rate of return on average over the next 10 years, yet have less risk of a major impact on you if you have at least one or maybe even two, well, shall we say, unimpressive years. I'm being polite. Yeah, if you have a major correction somewhere in the midst, if you were in a more conservative, less volatile portfolio, instead of dropping 10 or 12%, maybe you drop 4 or 5. Again, it depends an awful lot on how you've invested your portfolio. These are the kind of conversations you have to be having with your financial advisor if you're working with one. Your financial advisor works for you. Remember that. And the advisors want to know who you are. And what I mean, who you are financially. What are your debts? What are your obligations? What is your time frame? Very important. It's not so much about what is your age. You know, I understand that. People used to say, oh, yeah, take your age and subtract it from 100, and that tells you how much you should have in stocks and how much you should have in bonds. So if you were 70, you subtract that from 100, and then you'd have 30% of your money in stocks and 70% in bonds or some other more conservative alternative, lesser correlated to the stock market. Well, that's, well, I'm not saying that it's wrong per se. I'm saying that it's, well, it's not as efficient as it could be. It sometimes gives you the wrong impression. The assumption using age goes back to the idea of at what point will you need the money. So if you are 70 years old, but the money that you're investing is money that you know pretty reasonably that you will never use, why? Because maybe you have a good, dependable pension. Maybe you're receiving Social Security with your pension. I mean, I have clients who fall into the category where you have two income earners in the household, and both of them had municipal pensions, and now they're earning substantial amounts of money in retirement in their 70s, and they don't need the money that they put away into their 403b plan. So their hope is, their goal is, that that money will be left behind to their children. Well, that's not such a bad idea, right? But as with all things, you know, they get a little bit angry, I know, every year when they come in, because they're sitting back and saying, well, I would really rather not take this money out if I didn't have to, but I'm over 70 and a half, and the government says that we actually have to take some money out. Okay, listen, our screen is not working in here very well, but my producer just whispered in my ear that we've got Jim on line one. So, Jim, that's all I know, is that you're there, you're on line one. What can I do for you here on Money Talk?
Hi, Don. I just have a question about Trump's proposed tax plan.
Okay.
So it seems like most of these cuts he's proposing are for the rich. Do you think they'll help the middle class? And also, where is the money going to come from? And also, do you believe in trickle-down economics? Like, it seems like it's all these things are for the rich. I don't know if I believe in trickle-down economics, so...
Yeah, well, anyway, that term was actually invented back in the Reagan administration when they, and of course the Democrats were jumping all over Reagan's economists, saying that, you know, if we reduce interest rates or if we reduce the tax rates dramatically, which they actually ultimately did during the Reagan years, then the people that have been paying those outrageous tax rates will now have more money in hand that they can invest in the overall market. And hopefully, as that money finds its way back into the economy, then the economy will continue to grow, and there'll be more demand for products and services, and that'll increase jobs. So put it this way: the word trickle down is complicated because people keep forgetting the word trickle is a real slow process. It's a very, very slow process, and we haven't seen this type of economic adjustment for quite some time. But ultimately, what's happening right now is we got the first broad picture of what the Trump tax bill is going to look like coming in, and it is it's extremely broad. Can you hear me, Jim? Can you hear me? I mean, I'm getting a lot of static on my phones here, but my earphones, what are you going to do? But anyway, we will, as they start putting some meat on the bone with the tax plan, we will come here on the Money Talk program and start explaining it more thoroughly. And with that in mind, we'll try to give an improved outlook on who will benefit from it and who will not benefit from it. Right now, what we do know, that there are just a few areas that we can think of that will actually be what we call revenue neutral, which means money that will be available for tax reform that won't actually increase the deficit. And that would come in the category of things like corporate tax rates on money that's being earned overseas, which is being taxed in the foreign markets where the money is earned. But then if it's a U.S. company, let's say doing work in Italy or France or Germany, and then if they wanted to bring that money back to the parent corporation, they would actually have to pay taxes again on that money as it comes into the U.S. Now, the gross rate that they talk about the companies paying corporate tax would be around 35%. But most of these large corporations have very, very high-priced tax attorneys who know how to take advantage of deductions and certain exemptions that are available, even at the corporate level. So I think that they said that the average rate after all the deductions and everything is in that 14 and 15% range already, which is, of course, the range they would like to formalize and say, yeah, we'll bring the 35% rate down to about 15. But if that's enough incentive for these corporations to start bringing that money home, then what will happen is, first of all, the government will actually get some, even if it's 15%, they'll get some revenue from the repatriation of that money. That money can be used, of course, for, you know, maybe building roads and bridges and tunnels and things like we need, certainly in the infrastructure spending idea. But that said, it doesn't really cost anything to do that if they do it, because it's money that we wouldn't ordinarily see. The bigger issue is going to be whether, you know, the level of tax breaks that are given to, as you suggested, to wealthy people. And the reason they say that the wealthy benefit from a lot of these tax programs is because a lot of people in the lower one-third of American earners here in the United States pay little or no taxes at all. They're in the very, very low tax bracket. And when you factor out what they actually end up paying in for federal and state taxes compared to their gross earnings, most of them are paying under 10% rate anyway. So the only people that the higher brackets affect normally, which of course makes them the people who would benefit most from tax reductions and changes, would be those higher income, upper middle income and upper income individuals who are already paying maybe on average, if they average it out, about maybe 20 to 28%. When they figure that out, maybe they can bring that down to a lower level. Now, this only works if all of this provides an incentive to individuals to spend, to invest, small businesses to hire, to create new higher-paying jobs. I mean, there's a lot of ways that it can go. The bigger problem is that there's a group of very conservative Republicans in Congress. We used to call them the Tea Party, but the Freedom Caucus is concerned about, you know, increasing the budget deficit even greater than it already is in order to fund a great many of these programs. The Trump administration concerns me a little bit as a person who studies economics. It concerns me by the fact that they're depending upon an economic growth rate of going from 1.6 or 1.7, where we are now, GDP growth, up to about 3% or more. Now, if they could get 3 to 3.5% GDP growth, then a number of the plans are become revenue neutral because you're earning so much more money that the tax rates, even a lower rate that you're at, will raise more capital, which is exactly what happened during the Clinton years. You had the stock market going through the roof, people selling off and taking their profits, and the profits were taxable. So really, the Clinton years were the last years under Bill Clinton where we actually had a budget surplus. Even though it was for a brief period of time, you did, in fact, have one. But that's a cyclical phenomenon. In his case, Bill Clinton was fortunate enough to be president at a time when the economy was moving into that cycle. But we'll talk more and more about the tax bills as we get more information. Right now, the information we got today and yesterday was just way too generic for us to give any real serious advice to people on to what they should do, what they should plan on, and what they should expect from this administration going forward. But we'll try to take complicated issues and translate them into plain English for you, Jim. So thanks for the call. Look, we're going to take a quick break here, halftime on the Money Talk program, and we'll be right back. So please stick around.
Hiring is the most challenging part of my job. It's really hard. The searching, the sorting through resumes. Most people don't have the right experience.
We started using ZipRecruiter about 3 months ago. Right from the start, you could tell it was going to make hiring a lot easier. One click and my job was posted to 100+ job boards, all the top sites.
All of the candidates came to my dashboard, and it's easy to compare them. Thumbs up if I liked them, thumbs down if I didn't. No emails and attachments, printing up docs, phone calls, none of that.
And I couldn't believe the number of great applicants we got. I had the person we needed within 1 week. I don't know how we hired before ZipRecruiter.
Whether you're looking to fill one position or 20, find the best candidates with ZipRecruiter, where your job is just one click away from 100+ job sites. ZipRecruiter, the fastest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/talent. That's ZipRecruiter.com/talent. ZipRecruiter.com/talent.
Attention taxpayers, if you've received a notice from the IRS or state, do not ignore it. It's also a big mistake to try and handle your tax problem on your own. If you owe back taxes, the government has the power to take everything you own, your home, business, wages, savings, and your freedom. But here's the good news. For over 10 years, Oxford Tax Partners have been helping people just like you settle, reduce, or eliminate tax debts. We can do the same for you, but you have to call now. Take down this number or put it in your cell phone. 1-800-210-1493. That's 1-800-210-1493. When you call, you'll receive a free consultation with one of our tax advisors. We also specialize in helping people with unfiled returns, wage garnishments, tax liens, and bank levies. Don't make the big mistake in thinking you can handle your tax problem on your own. Stop the collection process. Call Oxford Tax Partners today at 1-800-210-1493 for a free consultation. Tax advisors are standing by to help you put your tax issues behind you once and for all. That's 1-800-210-1493. 1-800-210-1493.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-601-6992. That's 1-800-601-6992. 1-800-601-6992. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop. You save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health issuing company and other factors. Not available in all states.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program, everybody. This is Don Sowa on AM 790, your home of talk and business. We've been playing around with our technology. The sound is bouncing in and out. Doing the best we can, even with the computer system here. So I'm sure we'll get this in line pretty quickly. As a matter of fact, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave town for a week next week. I'll be in Budapest, Hungary, at an international conference. And when I come back, I'm sure that all the technical glitches here we have in the studio will be taken care of, I'm sure. In the meantime, my colleague Steve Beauvais, as well as my daughter Donna Allard, will be filling in here on the air while I'm out of town. Now, I mentioned that one of the issues that people have to confront is the fact that interest rates are rising and expected to rise further. Well, what has worked over the last few years, very low interest rates may not actually work as well as interest rates rise and as the economy starts to reflect that. Now, rates will rise if we have a growing and improving economy, but it does affect certain categories of investment certain different ways. Our expectations would be that rates would be moving very gradually, and most analysts are putting the odds at around 50-50 that the Federal Reserve's short-term Fed fund rate, which we mentioned earlier, the rate that the Federal Reserve Bank charges its other member banks around the country, that it would actually go up as high as 3%. My expectation is by the end of this year, 2017, it may be sitting around 1.25%. So that would be more than double to get up to that point, but go up to 3% by probably the beginning of, say, 2020. But that's it's almost 3 years away. And as I said, that kind of slow, gradual pace should have, at very best, limited impact on the fixed income or bond market. Now, there's the possibility that the central bank could raise rates faster than that, but that would reflect an economy that was getting potentially overheated. If the economy was growing too fast and we were moving into periods of hyperinflation as opposed to traditional inflation, yes, the Fed wants some inflation that allows companies to raise their prices at least gradually, and that means even some raise the salaries of some of their employees, which some of them have been pretty stagnant over the last few years. But you know, if there is such a thing as growing too fast, and that would be a problem. The Fed will watch that closely. Now, if on the other hand, the Fed could raise rates more slowly if the economic growth isn't as fast as they expect. So there's two different sides of it. The Fed, part of their mandate is not only to create an environment where we have very close to full employment in this economy, but another mandate is to control inflation. In other words, have some of it, have a healthy level of inflation, but don't go into hyperinflation, which could create tremendous problems with the cost of living and everything that we do. Now, Andrew Altfest, he's with the Altfest Personal Wealth Management up in New York. He thinks interest rates will rise maybe even faster than some people are expecting. Now, if they do rise, that means people who've been dependent upon interest that they're earning on their money markets or CDs at the bank or credit union, they may be pleased with that because they will see at some point some carry through by their financial institution where they will raise the CD rates. So when the rates, when your CD rolls over, instead of rolling coming down as they've seen over the last several years, they'll actually see the CD rates actually rising. But unfortunately, as I mentioned before, probably slowly. But there is, you know, a lot of uncertainty on the timing, on the magnitude of these hikes, and that all depends on the pace of inflation and the amount of fiscal stimulus that goes on out there. Remember, fiscal stimulus is what happens with Congress, with the White House, with the House and the Senate. Monetary policy stimulus happens at the Federal Reserve. And then most of what you've seen in the last 8 years in terms of this stock market and bond market have been driven by the Federal Reserve. That was monetary policy. Rates are rising as inflation expectations do pick up, and financial portfolios will actually require some tweaking, shall we say, to the allocations that you have now, you know, now other than what they've been doing in the past. New clients basing their allocations on what has been working, often having a pretty large concentration in large cap U.S. stocks. Their other holdings might include some small company stocks, some international exposure, and then maybe some long-term bonds going for those slightly higher dividend yields. They also probably have a decent amount of cash because that's how a lot of people deal with uncertainty. Now, while this type of portfolio has done well in recent years, it won't necessarily do as well in a rising interest rate environment. So these are the sort of things that you, as a person who has a portfolio, the things you have to be considering, you know, as you actually look at your money. Now, so among the things you should be looking to is to invest with volatility in mind. You're going to see some volatility in the market. It doesn't go up, and even if interest rates are rising, they don't go up in a straight line. And they don't affect the instruments or bonds or bond funds the way that you'd expect them to. They're not as it's not as clear cut as it all sounds. And by the way, the word volatility isn't good or bad. It just means moving the market outside of the normal rate. Now, because there is so much that isn't really known about the timing and the amount of the increases that are going to take place, investing with uncertainty in mind is probably not a bad idea. Plan for the best, but also understand, you know, that there can be some volatility as part of that. Official news on interest rates, as well as people trying to read between the lines, is going to create a lot of uncertainty and some volatility in those financial markets. Strategies to deal with this include, you know, different types of equities, maybe some hedging that uses options contracts to manage the downside of a portfolio. There are actually mutual funds out there that do that. J.P. Morgan. Now, these aren't recommendations to you, but I'm just mentioning a few because they describe mutual funds that, by their design, are intended to protect a portfolio if the markets go down and there's more volatility than you expect. Now, this is volatility on the stock side. J.P. Morgan has a hedged equity fund. This symbol is JHQAX. Again, you can take a look at it, but pull it up on your screen. There's a lot of free information on there, on these financial websites. Then there's also a fund called the SWAN, S-W-A-N, SWAN Defined Risk Fund, S-D-R-A-X. Now, you've got to be aware of something. These hedging funds, any of these funds that are designed to protect portfolios on the downside, often have a tendency to do poorly when the market is rising. So really, since their last election, you've seen markets go up double digits, you know, over this brief 5 or 6 month period. I would imagine a portfolio designed to protect you on the downside has probably done relatively poorly in this environment. So be accustomed to that. And if you're going to use a fund of that type, and of course, this is the sort of thing you should be talking to your advisor about, whether it's the right thing for you or not. If you're going to do that, you know, tell them what you're trying to accomplish. What are you kind of trying to achieve? And there may be one of the most difficult decisions will be if you're going to use a hedged portfolio, how much money are you going to put in there? What percentage of your portfolio do you honestly want to hedge? Now, among the other things you could do is the bond holdings that you may own right now may have done relatively well in previous years. Interest rates were coming down, so the underlying value of the bonds were going up. People didn't have to really worry about the bond prices declining. Now, that's changing a bit. But investors shouldn't necessarily exit bonds altogether because they still have a role to play in a risk-managed portfolio. They mitigate or help you reduce the risk of your plan, even if they aren't doing as well as they might have done in the past. You can't necessarily do without them. But it is okay to kind of reduce these holdings as interest rates do go up. Understand the type of holdings that you have. Understand what level of volatility or risk you're carrying. Now, in their place, you can add some of the alternatives, such as hedged equities, certain types of real estate strategies, like real estate investment trusts, even event-driven plays in some of these markets. Third Avenue Real Estate Value Fund deals with real estate at a favorable prices. There's lots of things you can do that are part of that. Again, ask your advisor. I'm going to take a quick break here on the Money Talk program, and we'll be back closing out this discussion of what happens as interest rates rise. What should you do with your portfolio? I'm Don Sowa, and we'll be back with more Money Talk.
Sponsored by Mattress Firm. Mattress Firm is collecting new clothes to help foster kids in your community look and feel their best. Bring your donation to a participating Mattress Firm or donate at mattressfirmfosterkids.org.
This is Amy from Moriarty's Fence, the Invisible Fence brand pet safety experts. The Invisible Fence brand works for all dogs, all breeds, all ages. We start training puppies as young as 10 to 12 weeks old, and we also keep cats safe at home, too. The key to our 27 years of success is our customer service and pet training support. Our installed outdoor safety solutions start as low as $7.99 and can be customized for your property. Call 800-225-0808 for a free design and pet consultation visit, or schedule online at MoriartysFence.com. At Moriarty's Fence, we work hard so you can rest easy knowing your pet is safe at home.
But it just makes sense.
And it's invisible.
It's the fence that makes sense. Get the invisible fence.
Moriarty's Fence, 800-225-0808, keeping pets safe since 1986. Moriarty's Fence reminds you to support your local shelter, adopt, volunteer, donate.
Tune in every Tuesday at 4 p.m. for IREM Today, the property management show here on AM 790. IREM Today is presented by the Institute of Real Estate Management, Rhode Island Chapter 88. Your hosts, Dina Cimarelli and Chrissy Denalian, take calls from listeners and interview guests from all trades and programs while providing insight and direction. IREM Today, the property management show, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. here on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Hiring is the most challenging part of my job.
We started using ZipRecruiter about 3 months ago. One click and my job was posted to 100 plus job boards, all the top sites.
All of the candidates came to my dashboard, and it's easy to compare them.
And I couldn't believe the number of great applicants we got. I don't know how we hired before ZipRecruiter.
Find the best candidates with ZipRecruiter, where your job is just one click away from 100 plus job sites. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/radio offer. That's ZipRecruiter.com/radio offer.
It's time for Dunkin' Donuts Regional Traffic, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee is America's iced coffee, now available in butter pecan and new coconut cream pie flavors. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
95 northbound, busy but moving through town. No real problems. A little slow after 195. 95 southbound, looking better for you now. Those troubles downtown at the ramps to Route 6 West have cleared out. Things are coming in on 146 better as well. Coming in on 6, you're slow at Dean and Atwell. Still, 195 westbound looking a little bit better. Slow at the bridges, but you'll be okay. And if you're coming down 295 southbound, still heavy around Route 6. I'm Rich Teeter with your right now traffic.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
You know, we're talking about some of the things that people are doing differently as interest rates start rising and how that may cause them to change the asset allocation that they have in their portfolios. Now, remember, we're assuming, based upon how much money you've invested, that you are well diversified. In other words, you don't have all of your eggs in one basket. But this discussion, when we talk about asset allocation, means that you're aware that having a number of baskets is not enough. What's most important is that the baskets be different and that they react differently. The term is they're not correlated one with the other. So you might want to have some assets in the portfolio, such as certain kinds of bonds, that are not directly correlated to the stock market directly. Investors also should buy some securities within the same category. So say you're looking at that, let's say 40% of your portfolio is in bonds. You may want to take a look at the bonds that you own, the bond funds that you might own, and make sure that, you know, start looking at some that have less risk in a higher interest rate environment. Now, that will suggest that you read a little bit about them. If you're trying to do this on your own without the help of an advisor, start reading a little bit about bonds. There are tutorials online, MSN Money, Yahoo Finance. There's a lot of different free websites online. Go in and just Google that money. You know, give me a brief tutorial. What do I need to know about bond investing? And they will come up with lots of different articles. You can pick the one that probably suits you the best. But some of the things you can do if you're nervous about the bond holdings that you do have is to include shorter-term bonds. There's certain types of bonds in the Treasury market, like inflation-protected securities, TIPS. Now, those will be bonds that adjust periodically based upon the consumer price index, whether inflation is emerging. And they tend to do pretty well as interest rates are rising. In certain securities that are tied to the housing market, called non-agency, mortgage-backed securities tend to do relatively well. There's another area of the bond market that tends to do well. They call floating rate or senior bank loan bonds. These assets are collateralized by assets provided by the lender, the person borrowing the money. And if it were an airline, they may take part of their jet fleet and put it up as collateral for issuing certain bonds that are out there. What's nice about them is many of these things will pay as much as 4% or higher as a dividend yield. But what I like about them is that they're collateralized by an asset that can be easily liquidated to honor the bonds if, in fact, the company should default on the actual payments. President of Rosenthal Wealth Management Group in Virginia suggests that people pay attention to bond duration. That's a certain kind of risk in particular, meaning how much its price can decline as the Fed funds rate increases. Among the ways you do that would be going into the shorter maturity bonds, With rising rates, investors should switch from, say, the 20 or 30-year maturities, which may pay a slightly higher dividend, to some of the shorter to intermediate-term bonds that might have maturities in the 2 to 7-year range, for example. Bonds have a lot of different choices, and they're oftentimes listed that way. Short-term bonds, short-duration bonds, intermediate-length bonds. A lot of the intermediate bonds will be in that roughly 4 to 8-year range. They will be less impacted by rising interest rates. It doesn't mean there's not a potential, but they will be less impacted. Another option is to look at what I just mentioned, the bank loan funds or the floating-rate bonds. These tend to do better than many of the conservative funds as the economy expands. But there's also going to be some risk involved in any of them. So they should be paired with some shorter-term bonds as a hedge. In other words, don't put all your eggs in one basket, or don't put all of your bond strategy into one category of bonds. Bank loan funds carry some credit risk as well as some economic risk. So pull out of them if the economy starts to shrink or contract. What we're doing is saying, hey, maybe these are among the bonds you should look at if you, in fact, are looking at an economy that is growing or expanding. Now, even though shorter maturity bonds will face less pressure than longer-term bonds, depending on how fast and how much interest rates rise, most analysts will suggest to you, as I will, we don't recommend going with all short-duration bonds. You should have a reasonably decent mix. That's because you won't earn much in the way of yield. I mean, these bonds have got to earn you something, right? Now, if you purchase a longer duration corporate bond that yields, say, 3.5%, you still may come out ahead if that bond suffers some price loss. Although they are riskier investments, having a higher yielding allocation in bonds gives some cushion as prices do come under pressure out there in the overall market. Again, it's not about what you do. It's about being intelligent about it. Now, shifting your equity holdings as part of this makes sense. Rising interest rates will affect the stock market, too. Stocks tend to do better than bonds in higher interest rates environments. And non-U.S. equities, the ones outside the U.S., you know, Europe, Asia, Latin America, you name it, the emerging markets, non-U.S. equities are more reasonably priced compared with domestic stocks, at least right now. So they're cheaper. The U.S. market has run up very nicely over the last 8 years. We've been in a bull market. Well, the international markets may have, in some areas, have done well, but they may not have done as well, and you wouldn't have seen the prices run up quite so much, so they're cheaper. While there are opportunities for investing outside the U.S., many analysts note that shares of, say, foreign companies can often be cheaper than those of U.S. companies because maybe the international markets are a little bit risky. Right now, we're looking at the global picture. We're looking at Europe as the developed market, and they have a lot of election pressure going on out there. The French elections are upon us right now. There'll also be Italian and German elections coming. And, of course, the British are still debating the whole Brexit strategy. International developed markets such as Europe and Japan are at an early stage of their recovery, though. We may be at a later stage in our rally. That means that the shares of the international marketplace may have more room to rise than those in the United States. Now, that potential for greater growth combined with some lower valuations, in other words, you're buying low, that can make those international markets more attractive. Not with all, but with some of your money, possibly. When investing overseas, many analysts recommend hedging the currency because many of the foreign, you could be looking at the pound sterling in Great Britain and British companies. You could be looking at the euro all over Europe. And that creates potential currency risk when you translate foreign profits back into U.S. dollars, especially as the dollar could get stronger than it has been lately. Now, one of the funds, mutual funds out there that various companies use in a currency hedging exchange strategy is the WisdomTree Europe Hedged Equity Fund. So the word hedging is in there, and in this case, it's a currency hedge. The symbol is HEDJ. Now, this may be a suitable asset to help hedge some of your international exposure, but remember, it may or may not be right for you. So talk to your financial advisor. Find out whether this is an appropriate part of your asset allocation strategy. Also, some people recommend the U.S. investors have some home bias, because they will be paying for their retirement or children's college in U.S. dollars. So having only, say, 20 or 30% of your money in international equities is probably pretty smart. I think right now, if you have no money in international, no money in Europe, start inching your way into it with maybe a 10 or 15% position and grow up to the higher level as you become more knowledgeable and more comfortable with those international holdings. Now, large cap U.S. equities or stocks have been a really good place to be and probably will continue to be pretty good over the next year or so. Some analysts recommend purchasing large cap companies such as Caterpillar, Dow Chemical, and those companies because those types of companies do well when the economy is expanding. Now, for the portion of your portfolio that is invested in U.S. equities, don't forget to buy what we call value stocks. You could buy growth. You could also buy value. So far this year, U.S. high-quality stocks have performed the best. So value stocks are cheaper right now, and they are a relative bargain for you. And you want to be buying stocks whose assets are priced below book value if you can. In other words, buy low, sell high. Banks also tend to be a good place to invest in higher interest rate environments. And there are a number of large and regional banks in the value category. Some analysts are pointing to the John Hancock Regional Bank Fund. Now, this has been around forever. That symbol is FRBAX, and it's been among the better ones, as well as the John Hancock Financial Industries Fund, which is FIDAX. The Regional Bank Fund is FRBAX. And again, as interest rates rise, the assets that are being held on deposit in those in the banks that they own are going to probably go up a bit. And, you know, the other side of that is that some of them have underperformed in the past, so their price, you know, has actually come down a bit. So they may be relatively effective price-wise, so you're buying at a good value, a good price. Many of them do pay dividends in some cases. Some of the bigger banks are dividend payers. I said, but more importantly, a large part of the way they make money deals with the spread between what they can earn on money that they have on deposit and what they have to pay out to depositors for that money. And if interest rates are rising, that spread becomes a little more generous for the bank. Well, we got about 4 minutes left. We're out of here. Okay, well, anyway, this has been the Money Talk program. Hey, listen, as I said, I'll be out of town next week. When I come back, I'll have a lot of interesting things to talk about with you about the global markets. But in the meantime, this has been AM 790. Tune in weeknights here at AM 790 for the Money Talk program. Steve Beauvais and Donna Allard will be here all next week.